Thus it came to pass that their people swelled the strength of Nargothrond. But it would have been better, as was after seen, if they had remained in the east among their own kin. Maedhros did deeds of surpassing valour, and the orcs fled before his face. For since his torment upon Thangorodrim, his spirit burned like a white fire within, and he was as one that returns from the dead. Thus the great fortress upon the hill of Himring could not be taken, and many of the most valiant that remained, both of the people of Dorthonion and of the East Marches, rallied there to Maedhros, and for a while he closed once more the pass of Aglon, so that the orcs could not enter Beleriand by that road. But they overwhelmed the riders of the people of Feanor upon Lothlan, for Glaurung came thither, and passed through Maglor's Gap, and destroyed all the land between the arms of Gelion. And the orcs took the fortress upon the west slopes of Mount Rerir, and ravaged all Thargelion, the land of Caranthia. And they defiled Lake Hellevorn. Thence they passed over Gelion with fire and terror, and came far into East Beleriand. Maglor joined Maedhros upon Himring, but Caranthia fled, and joined the remnant of his people to the scattered folk of the hunters Amrod and Amras, and they retreated and passed Ramdal in the south. Upon Amon Ereb they maintained a watch and some strength of war, and they had aid of the Green Elves. And the orcs came not into Osiriand, nor to Tower Im Duineth, and the wilds of the south. Now news came to Hithlum that Dorthonion was lost, and the sons of Finarfin overthrown, and that the sons of Feanor were driven from their lands. Then Fingolfin beheld, as it seemed to him, the utter ruin of the Noldor, and the defeat beyond redress of all their houses, and filled with wrath and despair, he mounted upon Rochalor, his great horse, and rode forth alone, and none might restrain him. He passed over Dor Núfauglith like a wind amid the dust, and all that beheld his onset fled in amaze, thinking that Orima himself was come. For a great madness of rage was upon him, so that his eyes shone like the eyes of the Valar. Thus he came alone to Angband's gates, and he sounded his horn, and smote once more upon the brazen doors, and challenged Morgoth to come forth to single combat. And Morgoth came. That was the last time in those wars that he passed the doors of his stronghold, and it is said that he took not the challenge willingly. For though his might was greatest of all things in this world, alone of the Valar he knew fear. But he could not now deny the challenge before the face of his captains, for the rocks rang with the shrill music of Fingolfin's horn, and his voice came keen and clear down into the depths of Angband. And Fingolfin named Morgoth Craven and Lord of Slaves. Therefore Morgoth came, climbing slowly from his subterranean throne, and the rumour of his feet was like thunder underground, and he issued forth clad in black armour. And he stood before the king like a tower, iron-crowned, and his vast shield, sable, unblazoned, cast a shadow over him like a storm-cloud. But Fingolfin gleamed beneath it as a star, for his mail was overlaid with silver, and his blue shield was set with crystals, and he drew his sword, Ringil, that glittered like ice. Then Morgoth hurled aloft Grond, the hammer of the underworld, and swung it down like a bolt of thunder. But Fingolfin sprang aside, and Grond rent a mighty pit in the earth, when smoke and fire darted. Many times Morgoth essayed to smite him, and each time Fingolfin leaped away, as a lightning shoots from under a dark cloud, and he wounded Morgoth with 7 wounds, and 7 times Morgoth gave a cry of anguish, whereat the hosts of Angband fell upon their faces in dismay, and the cries echoed in the northlands. But at last the king grew weary, and Morgoth bore down his shield upon him. Thrice he was crushed to his knees, and thrice arose again, and bore up his broken shield and stricken helm. But the earth was all rent and pitted about him, and he stumbled and fell backward before the feet of Morgoth. And Morgoth set his left foot upon his neck, and the weight of it was like a fallen hill. Yet with his last and desperate stroke, Fingolfin hewed the foot with Ringil, and the blood gushed forth black and smoking, and filled the pits of Grond. Thus died Fingolfin, High King of the Noldor, most proud and valiant of the elven kings of old. The orcs made no boast of that duel at the gate, neither do the elves sing of it, for their sorrow is too deep. Yet the tale of it is remembered still. For Thorondor, King of Eagles, brought the tidings to Gondolin and to Hithlum, afar off. And Morgoth took the body of the elven king and broke it, and would cast it to his wolves. But Thorondor came hasting from his eyrie among the peaks of the Chrysagrim, and he stooped upon Morgoth and marred his face. The rushing of the wings of Thorondor was like the noise of the winds of Manwë, and he seized the body in his mighty talons, and soaring suddenly above the darts of the orcs, he bore the king away. And he laid him upon a mountain top that looked from the north upon the hidden valley of Gondolin. And Turgon, coming, built a high cairn over his father. No orc dared ever after to pass over the mount of Fingolfin, or draw nigh his tomb, until the doom of Gondolin was come, and treachery was born among his kin. Morgoth went ever halt of one foot after that day, and the pain of his wounds could not be healed, and in his face was the scar that Thorondor made. Great was the lamentation in Hithlum when the fall of Fingolfin became known, and Fingon in sorrow took the lordship of the house of Fingolfin and the kingdom of the Noldor. But his young son, Eranian, who was after named Gil-galad, he sent to the havens. Now Morgoth's power overshadowed the Northlands, but Barahir would not flee from Dorthonion, and remained contesting the land foot by foot with his enemies. Then Morgoth pursued his people to the death until few remained. And all the forest of the northward slopes of that land was turned little by little into a region of such dread and dark enchantment that even the orcs would not enter it unless need drove them. And it was called Delduath and Tower Nufuin, the forest under nightshade. The trees that grew there after the burning were black and grim, and their roots were tangled, groping in the dark like claws. And those who strayed among them became lost and blind, and were strangled or pursued to madness by phantoms of terror. At last, so desperate was the case of Barahir, that Emeldir the Man-Hearted, his wife, whose mind was rather to fight beside her son and her husband than to flee, gathered together all the women and children that were left, and gave arms to those that would bear them. And she led them into the mountains that lay behind, and so by perilous paths until they came at last, with loss and misery, to Brethil. Some were there received among the Haladin, but some passed on over the mountains to Dor Lomin, and the people of Galdor, Hador's son. And among those were Rian, daughter of Belagund and Morwen, who was named Elethwen, that is, Elfsheen, daughter of Baragond. But none ever saw again the men that they had left, for these were slain one by one, until at last only 12 men remained to Barahir. Beren his son, and Baragond and Belagund his nephews, the sons of Bregolas, and 9 faithful servants of his house, whose names were long remembered in the songs of the Noldor. Brathruin and Dairuin they were, Dagnir and Ragnar, Gildor and Gorlim the Unhappy, Arthad and Orthel, and Hathaldir the Young. Outlaws without hope they became, a desperate band that could not escape and would not yield, for their dwellings were destroyed, and their wives and children captured, slain or fled. From Hithlum they came, neither news nor help, and Barahir and his men were hunted like wild beasts. And they retreated to the barren highland above the forest, and wandered among the tarns and rocky moors of that region, furthest from the spies and spells of Morgoth. Their bed was the heather, and their roof the cloudy sky. For nigh on 2 years after the Dagor Bragolach, The Noldor still defended the western pass about the sources of Sirion, for the power of Ulmo was in that water, and Minas Tirith withstood the orcs. But at length, after the fall of Fingolfin, Sauron, greatest and most terrible of the servants of Morgoth, who in the Sindarin tongue was named Gothawr, came against Orodreth, the warden of the tower upon Tol Sirion. Sauron was become now a sorcerer of dreadful power, master of shadows and of phantoms, foul in wisdom, cruel in strength, misshaping what he touched, twisting what he ruled, lord of werewolves. His dominion was torment. He took Minas Tirith by assault, for a dark cloud of fear fell upon those that defended it, and Orodreth was driven out and fled to Nargothrond. Then Sauron made it into a watchtower for Morgoth, a stronghold of evil and a menace. And the fair isle of Tol Sirion became accursed, and it was called Tol Ingaroth, the Isle of Werewolves. No living creature could pass through that veil that Sauron did not espy from the tower where he sat. And Morgoth held now the western pass, and his terror filled the fields and woods of Beleriand. Beyond Hithlum, he pursued his foes relentlessly, and he searched out their hiding places and took their strongholds one by one. The orcs, growing ever bolder, wandered at will far and wide, coming down Sirion in the west and Kelon in the east, and they encompassed Doriath, and they harried the lands so that beasts and bird fled before them, and silence and desolation spread steadily from the north. Many of the Noldor and the Sindar they took captive and led to Angband and made them thralls, forcing them to use their skill and their knowledge in the service of Morgoth. And Morgoth sent out his spies, and they were clad in false forms, and deceit was in their speech. They made lying promises of reward, and with cunning words sought to arouse fear and jealousy among the peoples, accusing their kings and chieftains of greed and of treachery one to another. And because of the curse of the kinslaying at Al-Qualand, these lies were often believed. And indeed, as the time darkened, they had a measure of truth. For the hearts and minds of the elves of Beleriand became clouded with despair and fear. But ever the Noldor feared most the treachery of those of their own kin, who had been thralls in Angband. For Morgoth used some of these for his evil purposes, and feigning to give them liberty, sent them abroad. But their wills were chained to his, and they strayed only to come back to him again. Therefore, if any of his captives escaped in truth and returned to their own people, they had little welcome, and wandered alone outlawed and desperate. To men, Morgoth feigned pity, if any would hearken to his messages, saying that their woes came only of their servitude to the rebel Noldor. But at the hands of the rightful lord of Middle-earth, they would get honour and a just reward of valour if they would leave rebellion. But few men of the three houses of the Edain would give ear to him, not even were they brought to the torment of Angband. Therefore Morgoth pursued them with hatred, and he sent his messengers over the mountains. It is told that at this time the swarthy men came first into Beleriand. Some were already secretly under the dominion of Morgoth, and came at his call, but not all. For the rumour of Beleriand, of its lands and waters, of its wars and riches, went now far and wide, and the wandering feet of men were ever set westward in those days. These men were short and broad, long and strong in the arm. Their skins were swart or sallow, and their hair was dark as were their eyes. Their houses were many, and some had greater liking for the dwarves of the mountains than for the elves. But Maedhros, knowing the weakness of the Noldor and the Edain, whereas the pits of Angband seemed to hold store inexhaustible and ever renewed, made alliance with these new-come men, and gave his friendship to the greatest of their chieftains, Bor and Ulfang. And Morgoth was well content, for this was as he had designed. The sons of Bor were Borlad, Borlach, and Borthand, and they followed Maedhros and Maglor, and cheated the hopes of Morgoth, and were faithful. The sons of Ulfang the Black were Ulfast and Ulwarth, and Uldor the Accursed, and they followed Caranthir and swore allegiance to him and proved faithless. There was small love between the Edain and the Easterlings, and they met seldom, for the newcomers abode long in East Beleriand. But Hador's folk were shut in Hithlum, and Beor's house was well nigh destroyed. The people of Haleth were at first untouched by the northern war, for they dwelt to the southward in the forest of Brethil. But now there was battle between them and the invading orcs, for they were stout-hearted men and would not lightly forsake the woods that they loved. And amid the tale of defeats of that time, the deeds of the Haladin are remembered with honour. For after the taking of Minas Tirith, the orcs came through the western pass, and maybe would have ravaged even to the mouths of Sirion. But Halmir, lord of the Haladin, sent swift word to Thingol, for he had friendship with the elves that guarded the borders of Doriath. Then Beleg Strongbow, chief of the March Wardens of Thingol, brought great strength of the Sindar armed with axes into Brethil, and issuing from the deeps of the forest, Halmir and Beleg took an orc legion at unawares and destroyed it. Thereafter, the black tide out of the north was stemmed in that region, and the orcs dared not cross the Teiglin for many years after. The people of Haleth dwelt yet in watchful peace in the forest of Brethil, and behind their guard the kingdom of Nargothrond had respite and mustered its strength. At this time, Húrin and Huor, the sons of Galdor of Dor Lomin, were dwelling with the Haladin, for they were akin. In the days before the Dagor Bragolach, those two houses of the Edain were joined at a great feast, when Galdor and Glorethel, the children of Hador Goldenhead, were wedded to Hareth and Haldir, the children of Halmir, lord of the Haladin. Thus it was that the sons of Galdor were fostered in Brethil by Haldir their uncle, according to the custom of men in that time. And they went both to that battle with the orcs, even Huor, for he would not be restrained, though he was but 13 years old. But being with a company that was cut off from the rest, they were pursued to the ford of Brithiach, and there they would have been taken or slain, but for the power of Ulmo that was still strong in Sirion. A mist arose from the river and hid them from their enemies, and they escaped over the Brithiach into Dimbar, and wandered among the hills beneath the sheer walls of the Chrysaegrim, until they were bewildered in the deceits of that land, and knew not the way to go on or to return. There Thorondor espied them, and he sent two of his eagles to their aid, and the eagles bore them up and brought them beyond the encircling mountains to the secret vale of Tumladen and the hidden city of Gondolin, which no man had yet seen. There Turgon the king received them well when he learned of their kin, for messages and dreams had come to him up Sirion from the sea, from Ulmo, lord of waters, warning him of woe to come, and counselling him to deal kindly with the sons of the house of Hador, from whom help should come to him at need. Húrin and Huor dwelt as guests in the king's house for well nigh a year, and it is said that in this time Húrin learned much lore of the elves, and understood also something of the counsels and purposes of the king, for Turgon took great liking for the sons of Galdor, and spoke much with them, and he wished indeed to keep them in Gondolin out of love, and not only for his lore that no stranger, be he elf or man, who found the way to the secret kingdom and looked upon the city, should ever depart again, until the king should open the leaguer and the hidden people should come forth. But Húrin and Huor desired to return to their own people and share in the wars and griefs that now beset them. And Húrin said to Turgon, "Lord, we are but mortal men and unlike the Eldar. They may endure for long years awaiting battle with their enemies in some far distant day, but for us the time is short, and our hope and strength soon wither. Moreover, we did not find the road to Gondolin, and indeed we do not know surely where this city stands. For we were brought in fear and wonder by the high ways of the air, and in mercy our eyes were veiled." Then Turgon granted his prayer, and he said, By the way that you came, you have leave to depart, if Thorondor is willing. I grieve at this parting. Yet in a little while, as the Eldar account it, we may meet again. But Maeglin, the king's sister's son, who was mighty in Gondolin, grieved not at all at their going, though he begrudged them the favour of the king, for he had no love for any of the kindred of men. And he said to Húrin, "The king's grace is greater than you know, for the law is become less stern than aforetime, or else no choice would be given you but to abide here to your life's end." Then Húrin answered him, "The king's grace is great indeed. But if our word is not enough, then we will swear oaths to you." And the brothers swore never to reveal the counsels of Turgon, and to keep secret all that they had seen in his realm. Then they took their leave, and the eagles coming bore them away by night and set them down in Dor Lomin before the dawn. Their kinsfolk rejoiced to see them, for messengers from Brethil had reported that they were lost. But they would not declare even to their father where they had been, save that they were rescued in the wilderness by the eagles that brought them home. But Galdor said, "Did you then dwell a year in the wild? Or did the eagles house you in their eyries? But you found food and fine raiment, and return as young princes, not as waifs of the wood." And Húrin answered, "Be content that we have returned, for only under an oath of silence was this permitted." Then Galdor questioned them no more, but he and many others guessed at the truth, and in time the strange fortune of Húrin and Húor reached the ears of the servants of Morgoth. Now when Turgon learned of the breaking of the leaguer of Angband, he would not suffer any of his own people to issue forth to war. For he deemed that Gondolin was strong, and the time was not yet ripe for its revealing. But he believed also that the ending of the siege was the beginning of the downfall of the Noldor, unless aid should come. And he sent companies of the Gondolindrim in secret to the mouths of Sirion and the Isle of Balar. There they built ships and set sail into the uttermost west upon Turgon's errand, seeking for Valinor, to ask for pardon and aid of the Valar. And they besought the birds of the sea to guide them. But the seas were wild and wide, and shadow and enchantment lay upon them, and Valinor was hidden. Therefore none of the messengers of Turgon came into the west, and many were lost and few returned. But the doom of Gondolin drew nearer. Rumour came to Morgoth of these things, and he was unquiet amid his victories, and he desired greatly to learn tidings of Felagund and Turgon, for they had vanished out of knowledge, and yet were not dead, and he feared what they might yet accomplish against him. Of Nargothrond he knew indeed the name, but neither its place nor its strength, and of Gondolin he knew nothing. And the thought of Turgon troubled him the more. Therefore he sent forth ever more spies into Beleriand. But he recalled the main hosts of the orcs to Angband, for he perceived that he could not yet make a final and victorious battle until he had gathered new strength, and that he had not measured rightly the valour of the Noldor, nor the might in arms of the men that fought beside them. Great though his victory had been in the Bragollach, and in the years after, and grievous the harm that he had done to his enemies, his own loss had been no less. And though he held Dorthonion and the pass of Sirion, the Eldar, recovering from their first dismay, began now to regain what they had lost. Thus Beleriand in the south had a semblance of peace again for a few brief years. But the forges of Angband were full of labour. When 7 years had passed since the fourth battle, Morgoth renewed his assault, and he sent a great force against Hithlum. The attack on the passes of the Shadowy Mountains was bitter, and in the siege of Æthel Sirion, Galdor the Tall, lord of Dor Lomin, was slain by an arrow. That fortress he held on behalf of Fingon the High King, and in that same place his father Hador Lorindol died but a little time before. Húrin his son was then newly come to manhood, but he was great in strength both of mind and body, and he drove the orcs with heavy slaughter from Ered-Wethrin, and pursued them far across the sands of Angfauglith. But King Fingon was hard put to it to hold back the army of Angband that came down from the north, and battle was joined upon the very plains of Hithlum. There Fingon was outnumbered, but the ships of Círdan sailed in great strength up the firth of Drengist, and in the hour of need the elves of the Falas came upon the host of Morgoth from the west. Then the orcs broke and fled, and the Eldar had the victory, and their horsed archers pursued them even into the Iron Mountains. Thereafter, Húrin, son of Galdor, ruled the house of Hador in Dor Lomin, and served Fingon. Húrin was of less stature than his fathers, or his son after him, but he was tireless and enduring in body, lithe and swift after the manner of his mother's kin, Hareth of the Haladin. His wife was Morwen Elethwen, daughter of Baragund of the House of Beor, she who fled from Dothonion with Rian, daughter of Beligund, and Emeldir, the mother of Beren. In that time also the outlaws of Dothonion were destroyed, as is told hereafter, and Beren, son of Barahir, alone escaping, came hardly into Doriath. Of Beren and Lúthien. Among the tales of sorrow and of ruin that come down to us from the darkness of those days, there are yet some in which amid weeping there is joy, and under the shadow of death, light that endures. And of these histories, most fair still in the ears of the elves, is the tale of Beren and Lúthien. Of their lives was made the Lay of Lúthien, Release from Bondage, which is the longest, save one, of the songs concerning the world of old. But here the tale is told in fewer words and without song. It has been told that Barahir would not forsake Dothonion, and there Morgoth pursued him to the death, until at last there remained to him only 12 companions. Now the forest of Dothonion rose southward into mountainous moors, and in the east of those highlands there lay a lake, Tarn Eiluin, with wild heaths about it, and all that land was pathless and untamed, for even in the days of the Long Peace none had dwelt there. But the waters of Tarn Eiluin were held in reverence, for they were clear and blue by day, and by night were a mirror for the stars. And it was said that Melian herself had hallowed that water in days of old. Thither Barahir and his outlaws withdrew, and there made their lair, and Morgoth could not discover it. But the rumour of the deeds of Barahir and his companions went far and wide, and Morgoth commanded Sauron to find them and destroy them. Now among the companions of Barahir was Gorlim, son of Angrim. His wife was named Elinel, and their love was great ere evil befell. But Gorlim, returning from the war upon the marches, found his house plundered and forsaken, and his wife gone. Whether slain or taken, he knew not. Then he fled to Barahir, and of his companions he was the most fierce and desperate, but doubt gnawed his heart, thinking that perhaps Elinel was not dead. At times he would depart alone and secretly, and visit his house that still stood amid the fields and woods he had once possessed, and this became known to the servants of Morgoth. On a time of autumn he came in the dusk of evening, and drawing near, he saw, as he thought, a light at the window, and coming warily he looked within. There he saw Elinel, and her face was worn with grief and hunger, and it seemed to him that he heard her voice lamenting that he had forsaken her. But even as he cried aloud, the light was blown out in the wind, wolves howled, and on his shoulders he felt suddenly the heavy hands of Sauron's hunters. Thus Gorlim was ensnared, and taking him to their camp, they tormented him, seeking to learn the hidings of Barahir and all his ways. But nothing would Gorlim tell. Then they promised him that he should be released and restored to Elinel, if he would yield. And being at last worn with pain and yearning for his wife, he faltered. Then straightway they brought him into the dreadful presence of Sauron, and Sauron said, "I hear now thou wouldst barter with me. What is thy price?" And Gorlim answered that he should find Elinel again, and with her be set free. for he thought that Elinel also had been made captive. Then Sauron smiled, saying, "That is a small price for so great a treachery. So shall it surely be. Say on." Now Gorlim would have drawn back, but daunted by the eyes of Sauron, he told at last all that he would know. And then Sauron laughed, and he mocked Gorlim, and revealed to him that he had seen only a phantom devised by wizardry to entrap him, for Elinel was dead. "Nonetheless, I will grant thy prayer," said Sauron, "and thou shalt go to Elinel and be set free of my service." Then he put him cruelly to death. In this way, the hiding of Barahir was revealed, and Morgoth drew his net about it, and the orcs, coming in the still hours before dawn, surprised the men of Dorthonion and slew them all save one. For Beren, son of Barahir, had been sent by his father on a perilous errand to spy upon the ways of the enemy, and he was far afield when the lair was taken. But as he slept benighted in the forest, he dreamed that carrion birds sat thick as leaves upon bare trees beside a mere, and blood dripped from their beaks. Then Beren was aware in his dream of a form that came to him across the water, and it was a wraith of Gorlim. And it spoke to him, declaring his treachery and death, and bade him make haste to warn his father. Then Beren awoke, and sped through the night, and came back to the lair of the outlaws on the second morning. But as he drew near, the carrion birds rose from the ground and sat in the alder trees beside Tarn Eilwyn, and croaked in mockery. There Beren buried his father's bones, and raised a cairn of boulders above him, and swore upon it an oath of vengeance. First, therefore, he pursued the orcs that had slain his father and his kinsmen, and he found their camp by night at Rivil's Well above the fen of Serech. And because of his woodcraft, he came near to their fire unseen. There their captain made boast of his deeds, and he held up the hand of Barahir that he had cut off as a token for Sauron that their mission was fulfilled, and the ring of Felagund was on that hand. Then Beren sprang from behind a rock and slew the captain, and taking the hand and the ring, he escaped, being defended by fate, for the orcs were dismayed and their arrows wild. Thereafter, for 4 years more, Beren wandered still upon Dorthonion, a solitary outlaw. But he became the friend of birds and beasts, and they aided him, and did not betray him, and from that time forth he ate no flesh, nor slew any living thing that was not in the service of Morgoth. He did not fear death, but only captivity, and being bold and desperate, he escaped both death and bonds. And the deeds of lonely daring that he achieved were noised abroad throughout Beleriand, and the tale of them came even into Doriath. At length Morgoth set a price upon his head no less than the price upon the head of Fingon, High King of the Noldor. But the orcs fled rather at the rumour of his approach than sought him out. Therefore an army was sent against him under the command of Sauron, and Sauron brought werewolves, fell beasts inhabited by dreadful spirits that he had imprisoned in their bodies. All that land was now become filled with evil, and all clean things were departing from it, and Beren was pressed so hard that at last he was forced to flee from Dorthonion. In time of winter and snow he forsook the land and grave of his father, and climbing into the high regions of Gorgoroth, the Mountains of Terror, he descried afar the land of Doriath. There it was put into his heart that he would go down into the hidden kingdom, where no mortal foot had yet trodden. Terrible was his southward journey. Sheer were the precipices of Ered Gorgoroth, and beneath their feet were shadows that were laid before the rising of the moon. Beyond lay the wilderness of Don Gortheb, where the sorcery of Sauron and the power of Melian came together, and horror and madness walked. There spiders of the fell race of Ungoliant abode, spinning their unseen webs in which all living things were snared, and monsters wandered there that were born in the long dark before the sun, hunting silently with many eyes. No food for elves or men was there in that haunted land, but death only. That journey is not accounted least among the great deeds of Beren, but he spoke of it to no one after, lest the horror return into his mind. And none know how he found a way, and so came by paths that no man nor elf else ever dared to tread to the borders of Doriath. And he passed through the mazes that Melian wove about the kingdom of Thingol, even as she had foretold, for a great doom lay upon him. It is told in the Lay of Lathian that Beren came stumbling into Doriath grey and bowed, as with many years of woe, so great had been the torment of the road. But wandering in the summer in the woods of Neldoreth, he came upon Luthien, daughter of Thingol and Melian, at a time of evening under moonrise, as she danced upon the unfading grass in the glades beside Esgalduin. Then all memory of his pain departed from him, and he fell into an enchantment. For Luthien was the most beautiful of all the children of Ilúvatar. Blue was her raiment as the unclouded heaven, but her eyes were grey as the starlit evening. Her mantle was sewn with golden flowers, but her hair was dark as the shadows of twilight. As the light upon the leaves of trees, as the voice of clear waters, as the stars above the mists of the world, such was her glory and her loveliness, and in her face was a shining light. But she vanished from his sight, and he became dumb as one that is bound under a spell, and he strayed long in the woods, wild and wary as a beast, seeking for her. In his heart he called her Tinúviel, that signifies nightingale, daughter of twilight, in the grey elven tongue, for he knew no other name for her. And he saw her afar as leaves in the winds of autumn, and in winter as a star upon a hill, but a chain was upon his limbs. There came a time near dawn on the eve of spring, and Luthien danced upon a green hill, and suddenly she began to sing. Keen, heart-piercing was her song, as the song of the lark that rises from the gates of night and pours its voice among the dying stars, seeing the sun behind the walls of the world. And the song of Luthien released the bonds of winter, and the frozen waters spoke, and flowers sprang from the cold earth where her feet had passed. Then the spell of silence fell from Beren, and he called to her, crying, Tinúviel, and the woods echoed the name. Then she halted in wonder and fled no more, and Beren came to her. But as she looked on him, doom fell upon her, and she loved him. Yet she slipped from his arms and vanished from his sight even as the day was breaking. Then Beren lay upon the ground in a swoon, as one slain at once by bliss and grief. And he fell into a sleep, as it were, into an abyss of shadow, and waking he was cold as stone, and his heart barren and forsaken. And wandering in mind, he groped as one that is stricken with sudden blindness, and seeks with hands to grasp the vanished light. Thus he began the payment of anguish for the fate that was laid on him. And in his fate Luthien was caught, and being immortal, she shared in his mortality, and being free, received his chain. And her anguish was greater than any other of the Eldalia has known. Beyond his hope she returned to him, where he sat in darkness, and long ago in the Hidden Kingdom she laid her hand in his. Thereafter often she came to him, and they went in secret through the woods together from spring to summer, and no others of the children of Ilúvatar have had joy so great, though the time was brief. But Daeron the minstrel also loved Luthien, and he espied her meetings with Beren, and betrayed them to Thingol. Then the king was filled with anger, for Luthien he loved above all things, setting her above all the princes of the elves, whereas mortal men he did not even take into his service. Therefore he spoke in grief and amazement to Luthien, but she would reveal nothing, until he swore an oath to her that he would neither slay Beren nor imprison him. But he sent his servants to lay hands on him, and lead him to Menegroth as a malefactor. And Luthien, forestalling them, led Beren herself before the throne of Thingol, as if he were an honoured guest. Then Thingol looked upon Beren in scorn and anger. But Melian was silent. "Who are you?" said the king, "that come hither as a thief and unbidden dare to approach my throne?" But Beren, being filled with dread, for the splendor of Menegroth and the majesty of Thingol were very great, answered nothing. Therefore Luthien spoke and said, "He is Beren, son of Barahir, lord of men, mighty foe of Morgoth, the tale of whose deeds has become a song even among the elves." "Let Beren speak," said Thingol. "What would you hear, unhappy mortal? And for what cause have you left your own land to enter this which is forbidden to such as you? Can you show reason why my power should not be laid on you in heavy punishment for your insolence and folly?" Then Beren, looking up, beheld the eyes of Luthien, and his glance went also to the face of Melian. And it seemed to him that words were put into his mouth. Fear left him, and the pride of the eldest house of men returned to him, and he said, "My fate, O king, led me hither, through perils such as few even of the elves would dare. And here I have found what I sought not indeed, but finding I would possess for ever. For it is above all gold and silver, and beyond all jewels. Neither rock, nor steel, nor the fires of Morgoth, nor all the powers of the elf kingdoms shall keep from me the treasure that I desire. For Luthien, your daughter, is the fairest of all the children of the world." Then silence fell upon the hall, for those that stood there were astounded and afraid, and they thought that Beren would be slain. But Thingol spoke slowly, saying, "Death you have earned with these words, and death you should find suddenly had I not sworn an oath in haste, of which I repent, base-born mortal, who in the realm of Morgoth has learned to creep in secret as his spies and thralls." Then Beren answered, "Death you can give me, earned or unearned, but the names I will not take from you of base-born, nor spy, nor thrall. By the ring of Felagund that he gave to Barahir my father on the battlefields of the north, my house has not earned such names from any elf, be he king or no." His words were proud, and all eyes looked upon the ring, for he held it now aloft, and the green jewels gleamed there that the Noldor had devised in Valinor. For this ring was like to twin serpents, whose eyes were emeralds, and their heads met beneath a crown of golden flowers, that the one upheld and the other devoured. That was the badge of Finarfin and his house. Then Melian leaned to Thingol's side, and in whispered counsel bade him forego his wrath. "For not by you," she said, "shall Beren be slain, and far and free does his fate lead him in the end, yet it is wound with yours. Take heed." But Thingol looked in silence upon Luthien, and he thought in his heart, "Unhappy men, children of little lords and brief kings, shall such as these lay hands on you and yet live?" Then, breaking the silence, he said, "I see the ring, son of Barahir, and I perceive that you are proud and deem yourself mighty. But a father's deeds, even had his service been rendered to me, avail not to win the daughter of Thingol and Melian. See now, I too desire a treasure that is withheld. For rock and steel and the fires of Morgoth keep the jewel that I would possess against all the powers of the elf kingdoms. Yet I hear you say that bonds such as these do not daunt you. Go your way, therefore. Bring to me in your hand a Silmaril from Morgoth's crown, and then, if she will, Luthien may set her hand in yours. Then you shall have my jewel, and though the fate of Arda lie within the Silmarils, yet you shall hold me generous." Thus he wrought the doom of Doriath, and was ensnared within the curse of Mandos. And those that heard these words perceived that Thingol would save his oath, and yet send Beren to his death. For they knew that not all the power of the Noldor, before the siege was broken, had availed even to see from afar the shining Silmarils of Feanor. For they were set in the Iron Crown, and treasured in Angband above all wealth, and Balrogs were about them, and countless swords, and strong bars, and unassailable walls, and the dark majesty of Morgoth. But Beren laughed. "Ha! For little price," he said, "do elven kings sell their daughters, for gems and things made by craft. But if this be your will, Thingol, I will perform it. And when we meet again, my hand shall hold a Silmaril from the Iron Crown, for you have not looked the last upon Beren, son of Barahir. Then he looked in the eyes of Melian, who spoke not, and he bade farewell to Luthien to Nuviel. And bowing before Thingol and Melian, he put aside the guards about him, and departed from Menegroth alone. Then at last Melian spoke, and she said to Thingol, O king, you have devised cunning counsel, but if my eyes have not lost their sight, it is ill for you whether Beren fail in his errand or achieve it, for you have doomed either your daughter or yourself. And now is Doriath drawn within the fate of a mightier realm. But Thingol answered, I sell not to elves or men those whom I love and cherish above all treasure. And if there were hope or fear that Beren should come ever back alive to Menegroth, he should not have looked again upon the light of heaven, though I had sworn it. But Luthien was silent, and from that hour she sang not again in Doriath. A brooding silence fell upon the woods, and the shadows lengthened in the kingdom of Thingol. It is told in the Lay of Lathian that Beren passed through Doriath unhindered, and came at length to the region of the Twilight Meres and the Fens of Sirion. And leaving Thingol's land, he climbed the hills above the falls of Sirion, where the river plunged underground with great noise. Thence he looked westward, and through the mist and rains that lay upon the hills, he saw Talath Dirnan, the guarded plain, stretching between Sirion and Narog. And beyond, he descried afar the highlands of Tower Enfaroth, that rose above Nargothrond, and being destitute without hope or counsel, he turned his feet thither. Upon all that plain the elves of Nargothrond kept unceasing watch, and every hill upon its borders was crowned with hidden towers, and through all its woods and fields archers ranged secretly and with great craft. Their arrows were sure and deadly, and nothing crept there against their will. Therefore, ere Beren had come far upon his road, they were aware of him, and his death was nigh. But knowing his danger, he held ever aloft the ring of Felagund, and though he saw no living thing, because of the stealth of the hunters, he felt that he was watched, and he cried often aloud, I am Beren, son of Barahir, friend of Felagund. Take me to the king. Therefore the hunters slew him not, but assembling, they waylaid him and commanded him to halt. But seeing the ring, they bowed before him, though he was in evil plight, wild and wayworn, and they led him northward and westward, going by night lest their paths should be revealed. For at that time there was no ford or bridge over the torrent of Narog before the gates of Nargothrond. But further to the north, where Ginglith joined Narog, the flood was less, and crossing there and turning again southward, the elves led Beren under the light of the moon to the dark gates of their hidden halls. Thus Beren came before King Finrod Felagund, and Felagund knew him, needing no ring to remind him of the kin of Beor and of Barahir. Behind closed doors they sat, and Beren told of the death of Barahir and of all that had befallen him in Doriath, and he wept, recalling Luthien and their joy together. But Felagund heard his tale in wonder and disquiet, and he knew that the oath he had sworn was come upon him for his death, as long before he had foretold to Galadriel. He spoke then to Beren in heaviness of heart, It is plain that Thingol desires your death, but it seems that this doom goes beyond his purpose, and that the oath of Feanor is again at work. For the Silmarils are cursed with an oath of hatred, and he that even names them in desire moves a great power from slumber. And the sons of Feanor would lay all the elf kingdoms in ruin, rather than suffer any other than themselves to win or possess a Silmaril, for the oath drives them. And now Celegorm and Curufin are dwelling in my halls, and though I, Finarfin's son, am king, they have won a strong power in the realm, and lead many of their own people. They have shown friendship to me in every need. but I fear that they will show neither love nor mercy to you if your quest be told. Yet my own oath holds, and thus we are all ensnared." Then King Felagund spoke before his people, recalling the deeds of Barahir and his vow, and he declared that it was laid upon him to aid the son of Barahir in his need, and he sought the help of his chieftains. Then Celegorm arose amid the throng, and drawing his sword he cried, "Be he friend or foe, whether demon of Morgoth or elf or child of men, or any other living thing in Arda, neither law, nor love, nor league of hell, nor might of the Valar, nor any power of wizardry, shall defend him from the pursuing hate of Feanor's sons, if he take or find a Silmaril and keep it. For the Silmarils we alone claim, until the world ends." Many other words he spoke, as potent as were long before in Tirion the words of his father that first inflamed the Noldor to rebellion. And after Celegorm, Curufin spoke, more softly, but with no less power, conjuring in the minds of the elves a vision of war and the ruin of Nargothrond. So great a fear did he set in their hearts that never after until the time of Turin would any elf of that realm go into open battle. But with stealth and ambush, with wizardry and venomed dart, they pursued all strangers, forgetting the bonds of kinship. Thus they fell from the valor and freedom of the elves of old, and their land was darkened. And now they murmured that Finarfin's son was not as a Valar to command them, and they turned their faces from him. But the curse of Mandos came upon the brothers, and dark thoughts arose in their hearts, thinking to send forth Felagund alone to his death, and to usurp, it might be, the throne of Nargothrond. For they were of the eldest line of the princes of the Noldor. And Felagund, seeing that he was forsaken, took from his head the silver crown of Nargothrond, and cast it at his feet, saying, "Your oaths of faith to me you may break, but I must hold my bond. Yet if there be any on whom the shadow of our curse has not yet fallen, I should find at least a few to follow me, and should not go hence as a beggar that is thrust from the gates." There were 10 that stood by him, and the chief of them, who was named Edrahil, stooping, lifted the crown, and asked that it be given to a steward until Felagund's return. "For you remain my king and theirs," he said, "whatever betide." Then Felagund gave the crown of Nargothrond to Orodreth his brother to govern in his stead, and Celegorm and Curufin said nothing, but they smiled and went from the halls. On an evening of autumn, Felagund and Beren set out from Nargothrond with their 10 companions, and they journeyed beside Narog to his source in the falls of Ivrin. Beneath the shadowy mountains they came upon a company of orcs, and slew them all in their camp by night, and they took their gear and their weapons. By the arts of Felagund, their own forms and faces were changed into the likeness of orcs, and thus disguised, they came far upon their northward road, and ventured into the western pass between Ered-Wethrin and the highlands of Tawr Nufuin. But Sauron in his tower was ware of them, and doubt took him, for they went in haste, and stayed not to report their deeds, as were commanded to all the servants of Morgoth that passed that way. Therefore he sent to waylay them, and bring them before him. Thus befell the contest of Sauron and Felagund, which is renowned. For Felagund strove with Sauron in songs of power, and the power of the king was very great. But Sauron held the mastery, as is told in the Lay of Lathian. He chanted a song of wizardry, of piercing opening, of treachery, revealing, uncovering, betraying. Then sudden Felagund there swaying, sang in answer a song of staying, resisting, battling against power, of secrets kept, strength like a tower, and trust unbroken, freedom, escape, of changing and of shifting shape, of snares eluded, broken traps, the prison opening, the chain that snaps. Backwards and forwards swayed their song, reeling and foundering, as ever more strong, the chanting swelled. Felagund fought, and all the magic and might he brought of Elveness into his words. Softly in the gloom they heard the birds, singing afar in Nargothrond, the sighing of the sea beyond. Beyond the western world, on sand of pearls in elven land. Then the gloom gathered, darkness growing, in Valinor the red blood flowing. Beside the sea where the Noldor slew the foam riders and steeling drew their white ships with their white sails from lamplit havens. The wind wails, the wolf howls, the ravens flee. The ice mutters in the mouths of the sea. The captives sad in Angband mourn. Thunder rumbles, the fires burn, and Finrod fell before the throne. Then Sauron stripped from them their disguise, and they stood before him naked and afraid. But though their kinds were revealed, Sauron could not discover their names or their purposes. He cast them, therefore, into a deep pit, dark and silent, and threatened to slay them cruelly unless one would betray the truth to him. From time to time they saw two eyes kindled in the dark, and a werewolf devoured one of the companions, but none betrayed their lord. In the time when Sauron cast Beren into the pit, a weight of horror came upon Luthien's heart, and going to Melian for counsel, she learned that Beren lay in the dungeons of Tol Ingaroth, without hope of rescue. Then Luthien, perceiving that no help would come from any other on earth, resolved to fly from Doriath and come herself to him. But she sought the aid of Daeron, and he betrayed her purpose to the king. Then Thingol was filled with fear and wonder, and because he would not deprive Luthien of the lights of heaven, lest she fail and fade, and yet would restrain her, he caused a house to be built from which she should not escape. Not far from the gates of Menigroth stood the greatest of all the trees in the forest of Neldoreth, and that was a beech forest and the northern half of the kingdom. This mighty beech was named Hirilorn, and it had three trunks, equal in girth, smooth in rind, and exceeding tall. No branches grew from them for a great height above the ground. Far aloft, between the shafts of Hirilorn, a wooden house was built, and there Luthien was made to dwell, and the ladders were taken away and guarded, save only when the servants of Thingol brought her such things as she needed. It is told in the Lay of Lathian how she escaped from the house in Hirilorn, for she put forth her arts of enchantment, and caused her hair to grow to great length, and of it she wove a dark robe that wrapped her beauty like a shadow, and it was laden with a spell of sleep. Of the strands that remained, she twined a rope, and she let it down from her window, and as the end swayed above the guards that sat beneath the tree, they fell into a deep slumber. Then Luthien climbed from her prison, and shrouded in her shadowy cloak, she escaped from all eyes, and vanished out of Doriath. It chanced that Celegorm and Curufin went on a hunt through the guarded plain, and this they did because Sauron, being filled with suspicion, sent forth many wolves into the Elflands. Therefore they took their hounds and rode forth, and they thought that ere they returned they might also hear tidings concerning King Felagund. Now the chief of the wolfhounds that followed Celegorm was named Huan. He was not born in Middle-earth, but came from the Blessed Realm. For Orome had given him to Celegorm long ago in Valinor, and there he had followed the horn of his master before evil came. Huan followed Celegorm into exile, and was faithful. And thus he too came under the doom of woe set upon the Noldor. And it was decreed that he should meet death, but not until he encountered the mightiest wolf that would ever walk the world. Huan it was that found Luthien flying like a shadow, surprised by the daylight under the trees, when Celegorm and Curufin rested a while near to the western eaves of Doriath. For nothing could escape the sight and scent of Huan. nor could any enchantment stay him, and he slept not, neither by night nor day. He brought her to Celegorm, and Luthien, learning that he was a prince of the Noldor and a foe of Morgoth, was glad, and she declared herself, casting aside her cloak. So great was her sudden beauty revealed beneath the sun, that Celegorm became enamoured of her. But he spoke her fair, and promised that she should find help in her need, if she returned with him now to Nargothrond. By no sign did he reveal that he knew already of Beren and the quest, of which she told, nor that it was a matter which touched him near. Thus they broke off the hunt, and returned to Nargothrond, and Luthien was betrayed. For they held her fast, and took away her cloak, and she was not permitted to pass the gates, or to speak with any save the brothers Celegorm and Curufin. For now, believing that Beren and Felagund were prisoners beyond hope of aid, they purposed to let the king perish, and to keep Luthien and force Thingol to give her hand to Celegorm. Thus they would advance their power and become the mightiest of the princes of the Noldor. And they did not purpose to seek the Silmarils by craft or war, or to suffer any others to do so, until they had all the might of the elf kingdoms under their hands. Orodreth had no power to withstand them, for they swayed the hearts of the people of Nargothrond, and Celegorm sent messengers to Thingol, urging his suit. But Huan the Hound was true of heart, and the love of Luthien had fallen upon him in the first hour of their meeting, and he grieved at her captivity. Therefore he came often to her chamber, and at night he lay before her door, for he felt that evil had come to Nargothrond. Luthien spoke often to Huan in her loneliness, telling of Beren, who was the friend of all birds and beasts that did not serve Morgoth. And Huan understood all that was said, for he comprehended the speech of all things with voice, but it was permitted to him thrice only ere his death to speak with words. Now Huan devised a plan for the aid of Luthien, and coming at a time of night, he brought her cloak, and for the first time he spoke, giving her counsel. Then he led her by secret ways out of Nargothrond, and they fled north together, and he humbled his pride, and suffered her to ride upon him in the fashion of a steed, even as the orcs did at times upon great wolves. Thus they made great speed, for Huan was swift and tireless. In the pits of Sauron, Beren and Felagund lay, and all their companions were now dead. But Sauron purposed to keep Felagund to the last, for he perceived that he was a Noldo of great might and wisdom, and he deemed that in him lay the secret of their errand. But when the wolf came for Beren, Felagund put forth all his power and burst his bonds, and he wrestled with the werewolf and slew it with his hands and teeth. Yet he himself was wounded to the death. Then he spoke to Beren, saying, "I go now to my long rest in the timeless halls beyond the seas and the mountains of Aman. It will be long ere I am seen among the Noldor again, and it may be that we shall not meet a second time in death or life, for the fates of our kindreds are apart. Farewell." He died then in the dark, in Tol Ingaroth, whose great tower he himself had built. Thus King Finrod Felagund, fairest and most beloved of the House of Finwë, redeemed his oath. But Beren mourned beside him in despair. In that hour Luthien came, and standing upon the bridge that led to Sauron's Isle, she sang a song that no walls of stone could hinder. Beren heard, and he thought that he dreamed, for the stars shone above him, and in the trees nightingales were singing. And in answer he sang a song of challenge that he had made in praise of the seven stars, the sickle of the Valar that Varda hung above the north as a sign for the fall of Morgoth. Then all strength left him, and he fell down into darkness. But Luthien heard his answering voice, and she sang then a song of greater power. The wolves howled, and the isle trembled. Sauron stood in the high tower, wrapped in his black thought. But he smiled, hearing her voice, for he knew that it was the daughter of Melian. The fame of the beauty of Lúthien and the wonder of her song had long gone forth from Doriath, and he thought to make her captive and hand her over to the power of Morgoth, for his reward would be great. Therefore he sent a wolf to the bridge, but Huan slew it silently. Still Sauron sent others one by one, and one by one Huan took them by the throat and slew them. Then Sauron sent Draugluin, a dread beast, old in evil, lord and sire of the werewolves of Angband. His might was great, and the battle of Huan and Draugluin was long and fierce. Yet at length Draugluin escaped, and fleeing back into the tower, he died before Sauron's feet. And as he died, he told his master, "Huan is there." Now Sauron knew well, as did all in that land, the fate that was decreed for the Hound of Valinor, and it came into his thought that he himself would accomplish it. Therefore he took upon himself the form of a werewolf, and made himself the mightiest that had yet walked the world, and he came forth to win the passage of the bridge. So great was the horror of his approach that Huan leapt aside. Then Sauron sprang upon Lúthien, and she swooned before the menace of the fell spirit in his eyes and the foul vapor of his breath. But even as he came, falling, she cast a fold of her dark cloak before his eyes, and he stumbled, for a fleeting drowsiness came upon him. Then Huan sprang. There befell the battle of Huan and Wolf Sauron, and the howls and baying echoed in the hills, and the watchers on the walls of Ered-Wethrin across the valley heard it afar and were dismayed. But no wizardry nor spell, neither fang nor venom, nor devil's art, nor beast strength, could overthrow Huan of Valinor. And he took his foe by the throat and pinned him down. Then Sauron shifted shape, from wolf to serpent, and from monster to his own accustomed form. But he could not elude the grip of Huan without forsaking his body utterly. Ere his foul spirit left its dark house, Lúthien came to him and said that he should be stripped of his raiment of flesh, and his ghost be sent quaking back to Morgoth. And she said, "There everlastingly thy naked self shall endure the torment of his scorn, pierced by his eyes, unless thou yield to me the mastery of thy tower." Then Sauron yielded himself, and Lúthien took the mastery of the isle and all that was there, and Huan released him. And immediately he took the form of a vampire, great as a dark cloud across the moon, and he fled, dripping blood from his throat upon the trees, and came to Tower Núfúin, and dwelt there, filling it with horror. Then Lúthien stood upon the bridge, and declared her power, and the spell was loosed that bound stone to stone, and the gates were thrown down, and the walls opened, and the pits laid bare, and many thralls and captives came forth in wonder and dismay, shielding their eyes against the pale moonlight, for they had lain long in the darkness of Sauron. But Beren came not. Therefore Huan and Lúthien sought him in the isle, and Lúthien found him mourning by Felagund. So deep was his anguish that he lay still and did not hear her feet. Then, thinking him already dead, she put her arms about him and fell into a dark forgetfulness. But Beren, coming back to the light out of the pits of despair, lifted her up, and they looked again upon one another, and the day rising over the dark hills shone upon them. They buried the body of Felagund upon the hilltop of his own isle, and it was clean again, and the green grave of Finrod Finarfin's son, fairest of all the princes of the elves, remained inviolate until the land was changed and broken, and foundered under destroying seas. But Finrod walks with Finarfin his father beneath the trees in Eldamar. Now Beren and Lúthien Tinúviel went free again, and together walked through the woods, renewing for a time their joy. And though winter came, it hurt them not, for flowers lingered where Luthien went, and the birds sang beneath the snow-clad hills. But Huan, being faithful, went back to Celegorm, his master. Yet their love was less than before. There was tumult in Nargothrond, for thither now returned many elves that had been prisoners in the Isle of Sauron, and a clamour arose that no words of Celegorm could still. They lamented bitterly the fall of Felagund their king, saying that a maiden had dared that which the sons of Feanor had not dared to do. But many perceived that it was treachery rather than fear that had guided Celegorm and Curufin. Therefore the hearts of the people of Nargothrond were released from their dominion, and turned again to the house of Finarfin, and they obeyed Orodreth. But he would not suffer them to slay the brothers as some desired, for the spilling of kindred blood by kin would bind the curse of Mandos more closely upon them all. Yet neither bread nor rest would he grant to Celegorm and Curufin within his realm. And he swore that there should be little love between Nargothrond and the sons of Feanor thereafter. "Let it be so," said Celegorm, and there was a light of menace in his eyes, but Curufin smiled. Then they took horse and rode away like fire, to find if they might their kindred in the east. But none would go with them, not even those that were of their own people, for all perceived that the curse lay heavily upon the brothers, and that evil followed them.